Welcome, believers. This is Lucha Lowdown. I am your host and El Jefe of this podcast, James Kincaid. And today we have the pleasure of being joined by a man who formerly was on the creative team for WWE. And you may remember his on-screen role as Big Dick Johnson. But now he gets to put on some more clothes and pull the strings for the most entertaining show on TV. We have Chris DeJoseph, the co-executive producer of Lucha Underground. He joins us on the Lowdown. Thanks for making the time.
Oh, no. Thanks for having me, James.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, we got to talk a little bit at Paley Fest in Los Angeles last month, and that was a lot of fun, and appreciate you taking the time then. So, I mean, Lucha Underground was at Paley Fest. Now, they're out for New York Comic Con, and
yeah.
I mean, which is amazing. They're going to have a panel at New York Comic Con. I think that is huge. What does that mean to you and for Lucha Underground?
It's pretty awesome to be represented at New York Comic Con. First of all, I was just over there, and it's nuts over there.
Yeah,
there are so many people and people dressed up. I couldn't believe how many people stopped me to ask me about Lucha Underground while I was there, which is kind of cool. And it's an exciting time. Unfortunately, I don't get to be a part of the panel because I've got to leave town, but. The people that are on there is a super all-star squad, and it's got the Jefes on there, Skip and Eric. So that's more than enough. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, no, I was looking at the lineup, and it is an all-star cast. I mean, it would be great if you could be on there as well. But I mean, I just think for the exposure and just how far Lucha Underground has come, I just think it's such a great step for everyone involved.
Yeah, it is a pretty remarkable thing, and I think, you know, the word is spreading about Lucha Underground, and to be a part of things like Paley Fest and now Comic Con in New York is it's amazing. So I think that very good things are on the horizon for our show and our entire crew as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I got to say, and I was talking with my co-host Jeff Budd about this when we were at Comic Con in San Diego, is that we want a Lucha Underground panel at San Diego Comic Con. I think you guys definitely would fill whatever room they put you in, and it would be so awesome to see you guys represented in California, since especially, I mean, so many of the believers would be able to go. I think that'd be super rad.
Yeah, I think it would be a wild party.
Yeah. I mean, watching at Paley Fest the screening of the second episode of season 3 with, I mean, that was a unique experience as far as seeing it from that perspective, because it was wild.
Too.
Yeah. It was crazy. But so I want to talk about exactly how did you get hooked up with Robert Rodriguez, Lucha Underground, El Rey Network in the first place? How did that come about? And what exactly is your sort of day-to-day role like with them?
Gosh, I mean, I guess it was a kind of a combination of things. I heard about this show being out there. I had kind of like thrown my name in the hat to maybe do something on it. I didn't know really what it was. I'd been doing some reality TV. I went for an interview to go work on Survivor, where I met the executive producer, one of the executive producers of Survivor, Matt Van Wagenen,
mm-hmm.
Who says, "Dude, you got to talk to my brother." And then Eric at the time was in New York doing Celebrity Apprentice. And then eventually we crossed paths. We had a meeting. And I think we just kind of clicked, and it was a great meeting. And the next thing you know, like, I think a couple weeks went by, and then eventually I got a call to come work on the show, and it kind of went from there. The relationship blossomed, and we kind of started to put the show together and build it, and build it from scratch.
Speaking as far as building it from scratch, how did sort of the rest of the team form? I mean, I'm talking about, like, you have all these talents that fit so well together, you know, that aren't in the ring. Like, you got Matt Stryker and Vampiro, who are killing it at the commentary desk.
Yeah.
Melissa Santos, I think she's the best ring announcer in all of sports and entertainment, not just pro wrestling. And then you got Luis Fernandez Gil playing Dario Cueto and Carly Perez playing Katrina, who, I mean, they're like the MVPs of the backstage vignettes. How did you sort of build this all-star team?
Well, it kind of started with, like, I opened my Rolodex and was like, okay, who do I know? And then kind of when talking with Eric, you know, kind of in the beginning and knowing that, okay, we had to have some talent from Mexico, obviously, to supply the lucha. But I felt like in American professional wrestling, in a way, to appeal to that audience, we needed to have a few known commodities. So John Morrison or Johnny Mundo, he and I had been great friends for a long time at WWE. I did a lot of fun stuff with him and Miz, like Dirt Sheet and all those stuff.
We had always been
really cool. I'm in a bunch of those Dirt Sheets too. I got to produce them with him, and it was like one of those things where we just had a cool relationship with, like, and it was cool because Vince was very hands off about those things, so we just got to just have fun and do it. So we always had a good relationship with one another, and I kind of called him for sure. I called Marty Elias because I knew we were going to need a referee. And I called Chavo because I thought Chavo would definitely bring some credibility and at the same time bring kind of a veteran's take to kind of the locker room in general. So that's kind of how those pieces formed. Stryker was a late addition, but I had been in contact with him. I worked with Stryker in the indies before I even worked at WWE.
No kidding.
So I've known Stryker probably longer than anybody in the wrestling business that I've personally known. So we've just always been friendly, and so I knew that he would be the right guy. I mean, sometimes it was like just the chips fell the way they did. Some things fell through, some things didn't. It almost felt like if pieces fell through, a better piece came and replaced it. It was just like everything kind of became a perfect storm in a way. As far as Luis, we created the character of Dario Cueto, and we did auditions, and people came in, and he was like immediately jumped off the page.
Dude, he's phenomenal.
And every time he came back, he just got better and better. And then the more like Eric and I would talk about it, or other guys like Chris Roach and Matt Stallman who are working with us closely on it, were like, wow, gosh, that guy, that's Dario Cueto. Holy cow. Like he just got better and better. And then we started to just believe that it was him, you know?
Yeah. I mean, cause he jumps off the screen. I mean, with everything that he does, I mean, he is amazing.
Yeah.
I'm glad you brought up the Dirt Sheet segments, cause that was something I was thinking a lot about as I was getting ready to talk to you. Because Johnny Mundo is one of those guys I feel like he has, and I was a big fan of his when he was in WWE, but I feel like he's even, gone into sort of like, light speed with Lucha Underground, really grown and gotten even better. And it sort of took me back to those Dirt Sheet segments when he got to show a lot of personality in those in working with The Miz and yourself. And it makes sense to me when I hear that, you were so heavily involved with those because you guys have really put him in a position to where he can really show his personality. He's so entertaining and he's really funny.
Yeah, I think when John's having fun and John's into it and John has some input in things, he can be the best. And I also think, like, at this point in his career, like, he's really just hit the nail on the head and he's got it and he knows who he is as a performer. And I really think that he's one of the best performers in the world right now, without a doubt. And I think definitely for John, he is at a high point in his career.
Yeah, absolutely. Completely co-sign on that. And he's been knocking it out of the park. I mean, just from this past week's episode with the segment that we got to see with him and Dario pointing at his abs and everything like that. I mean, I was rolling. That was so good and so in character. And it's just the things that you guys do so well. And I talk about this all the time on podcasts is it's the little details that I don't know how much of that is preternatural to the talent or creative side, but it's like the little details like Johnny pointing to his abs or referring to where I'm going back to my dojo or Marty the Moth.
Those are just little things that get put in the script. And then sometimes little things like that are like, hey, can I throw in a line here and there? And we're like, yeah, dude, that sounds good. Let's do it. It's kind of that collaborative fun environment that just makes Lucha so much fun.
Yeah, like I was talking with Carly, and she spoke about how she was given so much freedom to come up with a lot of the Katrina character, like the Lick of Death was
her creation. She came up to me and was like, hey, what do you think about this? And I was like, that sounds awesome. Let's do it. we kind of had a structure. It was like we built a frame for it, and then she kind of, as a performer, came in there and explored and kind of, thought about it, went different directions and threw things against the wall to see what they stick. I mean, there's a lot of times when things get thrown out there that aren't necessarily that great, but will we find something that will spark a better idea? Sure. I'm not just pointing to Katrina. I'm just saying in general.
Yeah.
It's a fun collaborative effort. And I think I have always found in my career in the wrestling business, the most successful segments, the most successful storylines that I have been a part of there was contribution on all levels and everybody was involved in it, because I feel like when somebody is invested in something like that, their performance will benefit.
Yeah, that's a terrific perspective. I completely agree. Are there any sort of funny behind the scenes stories you can share from either, you know, being at the creative process, maybe something that didn't make air, or just anything with the wrestlers? Because I know there's a lot of very funny, very entertaining people that you get to work with.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things that didn't air. I mean, there's a lot of things we just sit around. I mean, sometimes like it's just sitting around, just like BSing with everybody, throwing an idea or doing an impersonation or just playing around, that sometimes some of the best ideas are sparked. Like, I mean, I remember having this idea, we're talking with Chris about it, being like, oh dude, what if like we made Famous B like a manager? And like in my childhood, I used to, like when I was a kid, I used to always watch those you know, public access commercials, or like, you know, yeah. Those really crappy ones for like a lawyer, personal injury lawyer.
Yeah, I will fight for you.
Yeah, or like a used car lot. And like, I was like, dude, like those always were like, I don't know, I always loved them when I was a kid because they were so horribly cheesy and awesome. And I was like, God, we should do something like that. And then, you know, and then everybody starts talking. And the next thing you know, that kind of character starts to develop and something happens. You know, he went from jobber to robber.
I like that. Yeah, I mean, you know, Pentagon breaking his arm might be the best thing that happened to his career.
That was great.
But I mean, how long do you think? Because like, one of the things I really enjoy about the show is I love watching Marty trying to make Melissa almost break character and laugh during the ring entrance. I mean, has that happened before, or is it just ticking time bomb of Melissa just bursting out into laughter with Marty standing behind her?
It's usually once they get backstage. They're usually pretty good when they're in the ring as to not breaking character in that thing. But I can only imagine, and I've heard some of the fun things that he's probably said to her while he's up there. But they have such a great chemistry with one another. I mean, I know it doesn't look that way when you see it. It's like, oh, the creepy guy behind her. But truly, they have a wonderful chemistry with one another. And I think, you know, that story just kind of happens organically. It started as kind of like planting the seeds, and now over like now going into season three, that's a storyline.
Yeah,
you know, and hopefully hopefully we'll get to see something of that play out and eventually maybe one day pay off.
You're totally right. I mean, that chemistry, you really see it, you know, beyond just him standing behind her doing the moth thing and like smelling her hair, but like when he's thrown outside the ring and he sort of crawls over and like tries to hide behind her, and her facial expressions, you're right. I mean, just the back and forth they have is so much fun to watch. And then again, this week, you know, you see with Eva Lise when he's just yelling, you know, say you love me, say you love me. I mean, he's hitting it out of the park.
Yeah, he's totally insane and it's awesome.
So over the course of now, we're in season three, you've added a lot of pieces. I mean, are wrestlers just breaking down your doors now, trying to get involved with future tapings, everything like that? How's that been?
We have a lot. It's funny. A lot of people are coming out of the woodwork, that want to be a part of the show, which is really cool. And it's funny because, you know, when we first started, like I made so many phone calls where people were like, no, thanks. Mm-hmm. No, I'm good. And now kind of the tides have turned, but that's okay. I expected that. And, you know, at the time in the beginning, we hoped that it would turn into something and would catch on. And luckily for us that it really has. But I think that's really a credit to everybody involved.
What's been the biggest surprise to you about all of the success and praise that Lucha Underground's received?
I've never seen so much positive praise about a wrestling show ever.
Yeah.
For me personally, I mean, I expected just to be slaughtered by the wrestling fans. so to me, that was an amazing part, the amazing positive response and the feedback and how into it people are. You know, once you start seeing podcasts pop up and like, you know, people writing fan fiction, it's just incredible.
Yeah, because, I mean, I go to the dirt sheets and all these forums and stuff like that, and it's, I mean, it's if this were, like, the Rotten Tomatoes or IMDb, you guys would have the highest rating. Like, you're the godfather of pro wrestling at this point, essentially, in terms of ratings go overall for wrestling shows, which is incredible. And I want to talk to you a little bit about that, how you've, you know, been able to create so much success. And we talked a little at Paley Fest about the advantage you have creatively with it only being an hour as opposed to two or three, like Raw and SmackDown. Can you tell me a little bit more about how you sort of see that and why that's such a boon to Lucha Underground?
Well, I think that's definitely true. I also think it's, you know, our approach to storytelling and, you know, we have a long, we go for the long ball, you know, like, we don't necessarily pay things off in 3 weeks. Like we think 3 years or 3 months. And, I think that's part of it. I think the 1 hour, definitely is part of it. And we're always looking for cliffhangers and hooks and to keep the audience, you know, asking questions. And I think, you know, it really just comes down to just like sitting and thinking and planning about it and then not having to deal with somebody micromanaging our creativity about the show. And I think that is definitely a definite plus. You know, the people at El Rey Network and people from Burnett's side and even Robert kind of have encouraged us to go crazy.
That's awesome.
And that's fun. No, I mean, really, it's just like, we try to model it after what Robert's network would do. And then when you have a bunch of talented editors and producers and talent, you know, you get a product like that. And you, when everybody's kind of believes in what we're doing and having fun at work, like that's the best part. You know, I couldn't tell you how many times when I was at WWE, people weren't having fun and we have fun every day, and that's cool.
That is awesome to hear. I want to talk about, you know, we're in season three now. I've loved it so far. I really like sort of weaving in even more thematic additions like Dario's Dial of Doom and the Weapons of Mass Destruction match, which was just freaking batshit crazy. I loved it. So you sort of shared your thoughts that, you know, this is going to be the greatest, you know, in your opinion, Ultima Lucha Trace is the best one you've done. But what else in season three do you think is going to really jump out and stand out to the believers from this season?
Oh gosh, I mean, I definitely think that a lot of newer characters will stand out. I think the wrestling, in my opinion, just goes to a whole other level in season three. It gets crazy. I know it's a slow build so far, but I really think after this past week's episode, we hit the freeway and we don't let off the gas until the end. So, I think you're going to be in for a hell of a ride going forward.
I love it. And I just got to shout out the, what I would call keeping kayfabe alive, which is when you go to the backstage vignette of Son of Havoc, it's just somewhere on the open road on the, you know, on the lower third or whatever. I got such a kick out of that, you know, keeping his origin secret was just so good.
Man, it's the little details, I think, that make it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I want to talk a little bit about maybe a more serious topic, because I know you were on the Wrestling Mayhem show and you discussed a little bit about how WWE was essentially, for lack of a better term, trying to shut you guys down. Can you go into that more, exactly what that looked like?
I don't necessarily like what it looked like or what it looks like. I mean, it's no secret that they're the, you know, they're the big shark, you know? Mm-hmm. And, I personally think that they would like to see us not succeed. And I think that they have approached a lot of our talents. Actually, I know that they have, but that's okay. I mean, you expect it. It's the way the business is and it's fine. I mean, I just didn't want to necessarily make it a secret. I think it's a known thing. I think that's what they're doing. They've snatched up pretty much, you know, everybody in the independent scene now, and they have a roster that's ridiculously huge. But that's the business they're in. They got a network, you know. They have to create content. So, hey, I get it.
Yeah, I just personally think it's a shame that I don't know. I think there's enough of the wrestling pie that the health of the industry is better served by having more than one option. You know, I know maybe certain people don't see it that way, but I do.
I 100% agree with you. I don't think the WWE sees it.
Yeah,
that way,
agreed.
But I do. Yeah,
yeah, definitely. So I mean, has anybody from WWE, you know, obviously you don't have to name names, reached out to you though and say like, you know, hell, great job, you guys are killing it? I mean, because again, the praise has been so universal.
I mean, I have friends that still work there, especially on the creative team, and you know, they love it. So it's cool, man. It's really cool. And then I always bust their chops, be like, oh, you're coming after my guys, huh? I'll be like, oh, yeah, we're killing it, man. We're having fun. How are you doing? they're usually like, I work 20 hours a day. But I'm like, well, have fun.
Do you think it's more than a coincidence that WWE's chosen now to bring back the cruiserweight division? Because I don't.
No. I don't either.
Yeah, that seemed very, very convenient with everything going on.
Yeah, yeah.
And then just one last question on that vein. Rey Mysterio, was he always a part of the plan to be involved in season one, and was WWE trying to prevent that? Essentially.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely planted the seeds for him in season one. I think in one of the first or second Puma vignette, Conan mentions that a friend of his is the one who found Prince Puma and presented him to Conan to train, and that was the idea was that it would be Rey. I don't know if they necessarily tried to stop it from happening. I don't really understand how all that happened, but I knew that Rey was interested in the project, and we were interested, obviously. I mean, it's Rey Mysterio.
What's it like having him in the locker room now, too, awesome, for all the guys?
Dude. I mean, I've always loved Rey. I always think he's been great to work with throughout my time, even at WWE and now. And, like, I mean, dude, he's an icon. It's like having Hulk Hogan in your locker room.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I'm saying? Or Stone Cold. It's like this guy, I mean, especially for the luchadors, I mean, he's like – he's Lucha Libre.
Yeah, absolutely. He literally is the king.
To have the actual king, like the greatest luchador of all time, a guy who's drawn so much money. I mean, God, I can't even imagine how much money he's made, not only for himself, but for others. But, like, I mean, he's just – he innovated. He changed the perception of Lucha Libre throughout the world and kind of brought it mainstream. And, dude, it's awesome. It's like – I mean, it's like having a movie star or a rock star with you there every day, you know?
Incredible.
Really cool.
I love it. I talked with Edge recently on another show that I do about sort of the nature of heels and faces in today's wrestling world. And I wanted to put it to you as somebody that's on the creative side of things. You know, we've seen John Cena go through what he's had to go through with not being universally accepted as the superhero, which I think is really unfortunate in a lot of ways. And now even more so with Roman Reigns, like the fans really rebelling against him. And I really feel for them. It's got to be kind of like that Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, how come they don't want me, man, you know, kind of deal for them. But how do you see what's been going on in that regard as far as how, like, some top guys in wrestling are being received by the fans?
Yeah, I mean, I think it comes down to sometimes the character and sometimes what they're allowed and not allowed to do. You know, but in the end, it's the fans that decide. They're the ones that buy the tickets, and they're the ones that watch the show. So I think you have to listen to the audience. I think you have to understand what they want and listen to them a little bit more. And I think so many times WWE fought that, but I think they did for financial reasons as well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they had a different agenda. I mean, there's a PG TV show, and that was where they were going.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, John Cena sold a lot of t-shirts and toys, and I don't think John did bad because of it. I mean, John made
totally
more money than anybody in the business has in the past few 10 years, you know?
Yeah, he's not hurting.
Yeah, I mean, and WWE's not hurting. I mean, they're a huge company and making money, I think.
I think it might maybe just me more fan frustration that you want to see, like, the top guys get embraced. You know, for me, like, I feel kind of bad, like, if you're a little kid and don't understand why, like, half the crowd is booing your guy, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
But to that end, I don't think you guys don't really have that problem. I mean, you know, your top guys are cheered. However, Pentagon, who is my favorite wrestler in the world right now, but it seems like, you know, there's these sort of constant attempts to try and turn him heel again. I've compared him to sort of being like the Vegeta to Prince Puma's Goku. But the believers, we just don't want to boo the guy because, you know, we're bloodthirsty savages.
But I agree but I don't think the believers cheer for Pentagon to be a babyface.
Yes.
They cheer for Pentagon to be a nasty, unforgiving, psychopathic heel. And I think that is the end game. And, you know, I've also heard people like, why don't you just put the belt on Pentagon? That's like, okay, I get it, but these things have to let the story develop.
Again, you guys are playing the long con.
When the story pays off, it will pay off, and it'll be awesome.
Yeah, no, well, I certainly can't wait.
We shot two seasons back to back without any feedback, so we'll see what happens.
Very interesting. Okay, I will. You know, I've taken note of that. But yeah, I just wanted to get your outlook on that because it is funny. Like, just, you know, we were talking about, it's like he'd literally have to kill somebody in the ring to get any sort of heat on him from the believers.
Yeah, it's not like I'm sitting there being like, not knowing that Pentagon's the most over guy on the show. Like,
oh, yeah, no, absolutely. No, but you're right, though, because it's like if it would be disingenuous to the character if all of a sudden he was being the rah-rah good guy all of a sudden. So you're being very true to what has made him so popular, which as a fan I certainly appreciate. And so last one for you, because I know it's a busy day. You're out there at New York Comic Con.
Yeah. I got to go meet my cousin for beer.
Yeah, but hey, and I don't want to take away from beer time. But, you know, so one of the things that's made Lucha Underground so unique and able to do so many of the things that we've talked about today that's made it successful, it exists in this sort of space that wrestling hasn't been in before, and that it's part wrestling promotion, part TV drama. And yeah. I love TV drama, you know, True Detective, Game of Thrones, Walking Dead, all that. But my fear, my trepidation, even though I like to think that I have Cerro Miedo, I have a little bit. You know, as I ponder on a cold, lonely Friday night, is that how long can Lucha Underground go on for? What model do you see long term for in that regard? Because I don't see a reason why it can't be like any other wrestling promotion and just continue in perpetuity. But is that sort of how it's viewed on your guys' end, or is there a creative end game, which would be cool in a sense that, you know, I've never seen a wrestling promotion have an actual end point, which would creatively probably be super exciting, but also bittersweet.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I have an endpoint if it needs to end, but I wouldn't want it to ever end. I think they brought me into the ring on my birthday, and they made me make a wish, and I said, I hope Lucha Underground goes on forever.
Well, it's co-sign.
And I got a big pop for it. So hopefully that happens. Hopefully we fight forever.
Yeah, and I certainly hope for all of the continued success. Chris, thank you so much for taking the time today. This was a lot of fun. On behalf of wrestling fans everywhere, for helping reinvigorate the industry, I want to say thank you again, because when Shawn Michaels retired, I never thought I'd sort of rediscover the same passion for pro wrestling like I have.
Me either. I'm exactly the same. I felt the same way.
Are you serious?
Shawn Michaels is the greatest wrestler of all time, in my opinion.
Dude, did we just become best friends? Because that is exactly how I feel about it. So thank you for helping reinvigorate my passion for pro wrestling, and you have exquisite taste, my friend. Thank you so much.
Thank you. All right, dude.
All right, take care.